you. I'm Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Ray. And thanks to the grace of God in this program, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink all damn day long. That blows my mind. It's been that way for, 4,000 some odd days.
Since
January 1st, 1996, which doesn't make any sense to me. I remember the night before, I decided I was going to do a New Year's resolution. I was going to try this sober thing for 1 year, and I was going to look back after a year and see, see how it was. If I wanted to do that, if I wanted to do the drinking thing. And I decided to do a year, but I really wondered if I'd make it a day. And I heard that at midnight, the end of that 24 hours, I was amazed I'd made it 24 hours. And I'm still amazed today. I'm going to go to bed tonight thanking God and in this program if I can make it another day. Because people like me don't stay sober. Some of y'all may have heard me 2 years ago, or you might have the CD of Leslie's better introduction. No. I'm going to try to give y'all something a little bit different if you've heard me before, and focus a little bit more on what it's like today, what it's like now. But I'll give you a brief kind of idea of where I came from and how I ended up here. I was really, really fortunate. I got some really, really good genetics in a lot of ways. My parents were some pretty amazing people. But then also, my dad was an alcoholic, my uncle was an alcoholic, and my brothers were alcoholics. My grandfather was an alcoholic, so I got the alcoholic gene, too. But just quickly to set up where I came from, my dad was literally dirt poor. When he was a kid, he slept on a dirt floor in this old army tent. Didn't even have a floor. And, they had their little garden kind of actually on the side of the road. They didn't even own the land. They just kind of lived on the side of the highway in a tent. And he joined the Navy, and he worked really hard, and he was a smart guy. And he did really well in the Navy and got about a dozen or so medals. And they were impressed enough with him. They wanted him to do some covert work, so they set him up as an oil company employee and sent him over to the Middle East to do some looking around and whatever. And he worked really hard at both jobs there, in the oil company and the intelligence. And he was a smart guy and just worked his ass off, and he ended up being the vice president of that oil company. And some, 35 years after he was sleeping in the dirt, him and his sons and his wife were jetting around in a private jet. Pretty good genetics. A pretty good example. I think the best thing he ever did was he met this lady while he was in college, this lady who could do calculus in her head, and he was smart enough to marry her, and she was a really good lady, and just brainiac, just crazy smart. So I got those genetics, along with the alcoholic gene. Just like I say, every man in my family's been an alcoholic. And that worked out pretty well for me until I was about 12 or 13, and that's when I discovered alcohol. Seen my dad drink, I'd seen my brother drink and puke and get arrested, and so I wasn't sure if I wanted any part of that. But then I did want it. I wanted it because I wanted to be part of his crowd. You see, he had these friends around him who were laughing and having a good time, and I'd never had that. I remember from my earliest memory is kindergarten, of that feeling of being separate that we all have. Right? We're all different. Or I think a lot of us, Clifton was talking the other, a couple weeks ago about, every speaker comes up here and says, I didn't fit in. I was different. Yeah, we're all different. But that, I don't know if that's true for everybody, but it's absolutely true for me. And those are my earliest memories of being apart from and separate. And every other kid in the kindergarten had the moon boots, and I had the cheesy generic things and whatever. And for a long time, I thought that being separate and being a geek was one of the main driving forces in my life. I've recently found out that that's not true. The truth is, the big driving force is not that I was different or apart from, but that's what I focused on. I had an opportunity to go meet and talk with some people that I knew from kindergarten, and they explained to me that my life growing up was totally different than I thought it was. You know, I thought I was totally picked on by everybody and all this, and that's just not true. But that's what I like to focus on. So anyway, I decided by seventh grade I was going to become a stoner. What we had back in those days, you know, my brother and his friends, you know, get together and drink and smoke this and that and listen to heavy metal music and cause ruckus and get arrested. And, you know, if I hung out with them and I did those things, you know, I wouldn't be alone. And at the same time, I had this thing going of these genetics where I had people, college professors and who were visiting school and kept going, dude, you don't belong here. You belong at CU. Here's what you need to do. You need to get the hell out of here. And that kind of made sense to me because when I knew that I was separate and different and apart from y'all, I had two choices. Either I was worse than y'all and y'all were all better than me, or I was better than all of you. And I decided I was better than all of you. Or tried to believe that, but couldn't really convince myself. So about 12 or 13, I start drinking. Start drinking really heavy, really getting into it just because I got into high school. And it was pretty sad, actually. You know, you've got a guy who has these, you know, I come from a real good home and all that, and I'm failing out of high school because I just don't do the work because I'm too busy drinking. You know, and I don't have the story a lot of people have of like stealing cop cars and living in the oleander bushes, because you know I got to see my older brother do that. He actually stole the lights off of a cop car, and he would do those things, and the cops would beat the shit out of him, and then arrest him. You know, so I pretty much stayed home and I drank, and I stole some things, and you know, sitting in my garage, and really I didn't do much. I sat there, and the entertainment for my day was there was a thumbtack on the wall. If you drank the right stuff and you smoked the right stuff, that was a hilarious thumbtack. And tell me all the stories about the world's 20th thumbtack. I won't go into that too much because that's on the friggin' CD. But, you know, that was my life. And the plan was that some of these college people, some of these people from the school, they told me, drop out of high school, go to community college for a year, good grades, we'll get you in to CU. And then I had some other colleges that wanted me and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So I dropped out, started drinking, started smoking real heavy. But I was really excited to start college because my mom had told me, you know, once you get to college, it doesn't feel like so much into looks and all this, and you'll fit in better. And I was sitting in this college, I was 16 years old, and I was stunned out of my mind wearing this Metallica t-shirt and these big skull rings with spikes sticking out. And I was the one acing the test, and I didn't fit in, and my mom lied to me. I didn't fit in anymore in college, and so I said, fuck that, and, you know, I'm just going to drink. And that's what I did for the next several years. And, you know, I guess I was seeing my dad and everybody, you'd think that I would know the path I was going down. You know, my dad, my brothers, my uncles. But I was able to convince myself I wasn't an alcoholic, too. I'm looking at them and going, you know, say my dad's been divorced a couple of times because he's an alcoholic. He's wrecked some cars. He's done this stuff. I haven't done any of that. I haven't been divorced. Hadn't had a girlfriend either because I've done a lot. You know, haven't wrecked any cars. I had one, you know, for about a month at that point. It was wrecked when I bought it, but, you know, I hadn't got to jail five or six times like my brother did, because, again, I didn't leave the house. I didn't leave the garage. So it became pretty obvious, though, pretty quick that, you know, there was something wrong when, like, I can't go to sleep without drinking or doing drugs. It became pretty obvious that something was wrong when everything I believe in, everything that I thought was important, went right out the friggin' window when it came to drinking and drugging. You know, I should be a good older brother to my old brother and guide and protect him and teach him out the window. I sent him to go get the stuff, He gets beat up in the hospital, and I tell him, no problem, I'll do it again next week. And he's back in the hospital again next week. And I keep sending him to do it again. And I came in here to Alcoholics Anonymous, just really not sure, but I figured if I wasn't a real alcoholic, I'd go and I'd see what the real pros, you guys who steal cop cars, how do you quit drinking? And if it works for you, it'll be easy for me, you know? And so I showed up here and I listened and I tried to kind of do what y'all did. And it didn't, you know, the first couple of weeks, I totally didn't feel like I fit in. Because y'all are talking like getting out of prison, killing people, and, you know, you've been divorced 6 times. You know, like we were talking about on, you know, I walk in today, you know, 6 divorces. I'm like, I couldn't relate to that. I was, you know, I was 20 years old, and I had one girlfriend at that point who liked my weed, and, you know. And then they sat around, and it was this old people's meeting, basically, and they sat around and played dominoes. And I was like, shit, I don't fit in here, and I don't want to. You know? I don't want to sit around and talk to these old farmers and play dominoes. But y'all, they laughed. They talked about somebody would have been divorced 6 times, and people would laugh. And that was a good time. You know? And I hadn't laughed for a long time. That thumbtack just wasn't doing it anymore. And, you know? So I stuck around, I guess. I don't know why. I guess because I knew I was going to die. Really, underneath, I knew, you know, this disease killed my dad. It was well on the way of killing my brother, my older brother, and I knew it was going to kill me too, I guess. But, I, you know, I couldn't admit that. And, they talked about, you know, how to tell if you're an alcoholic. You know, if you drink more than you intended to, I intended to drink all of it. Doesn't apply. You know, if you get drunk when you don't plan on it, if I'm awake, I plan on getting fucked up. So, you know, that didn't apply, and I just wasn't sure until this old guy explained. I made the mistake of getting honest in a meeting. Mm-hmm. Y'all told me honest, open-minded, and willing, and I made the mistake of doing the honest thing. I said I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic. And this old guy explained it real simple in a way that made sense to me. He said there's normal people who order a margarita with their dinner and they might drink half of it, they might drink all of it. They don't care. And then there's us alcoholics who call that alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly what he was talking about. My mom was one of those. She'd take 3 sips off the margarita and leave it on the friggin' table. Uh-huh. I don't get that. Maybe some of y'all understand that. Probably not. Right? And then he said there's us alcoholics, and you're either an alcoholic or you're not, and, you know, I'm one of y'all. I knew that made sense to me, you know. I'm going to drink whatever there is to drink, and I'm going to get drunk, and I'm going to do something stupid. And that's all I'm going to do. Unlike my dad, who managed to do both. That's crazy. So I came, you know, looking at my dad killed himself, basically out of this disease. The guilt of the shit that he had done. And, like, you know, I told you, know, my brothers were in all kinds of trouble and all that. And I knew this shit was serious. So somehow, I don't know, maybe it was something that somebody said in a meeting. I wish I knew what it was. But there was something that caused me to get serious about this shit. To come in off the porch, get a book, talk about the steps, talk about what was really going on in the meeting, get a sponsor, and actually do this deal. You know, it talks in here about we beg you to be fearless and thorough. And for some reason, I did that. And I worked the first step, you know, as thoroughly as I could. And I had a problem a little bit with the idea of my life being unmanageable. I was like, dude, it's unmanaged. It could be, you know, it might be manageable. And my sponsor said, dude, shut the fuck up. Your life's fucked up, right? I was trying not to cuss this time because I cussed more than enough last time I spoke 2 years ago. But my life was totally screwed up, right? Yes. Okay. On to step 2. Look at us. Does our life look better than yours? Yes. We all tell you it's because of this God guy, this higher power guy. Do you believe us? Okay. Yeah, I believe that. It works for you. Okay. Step 3. Your life is screwed up. our life is better because of this higher power. Are you willing to give the higher power a try? Are you willing to do whatever is His will so that you can have the life that you want to have? Kind of like TCS anyway. Hell yeah. Okay, I'll do that. And it took about that long for me to work those step two and three. You know, step one was kind of hard. It took about 3 weeks. As soon as I had step one figured out, that I'm one of y'all, my sponsor wasn't wasting time. He was one of those guys that had read not just the first part of the book up to here, but he read all this part of the book where it talks about we went over to Dr. Bob's house for a few hours and worked the steps. This part in the back of the book where it says he talks about the guy being 8 days sober going on 12-step calls. So that's what he had me doing. I said, okay, go home tonight, hit your knees, pray. Tomorrow we're going to get started on the 4th step. And I told him, well, ooh, there's a problem. About the praying thing. I don't know if I believe in God or, you know, Allah or Buddha or what. And he said, dude, I didn't tell you to figure that out. I said, go hit your friggin' knees. Well, I don't know what to say. Well, okay, say that. If you don't know what to say, if that's honest, if you don't believe in God, hit your knees and say that. Okay. He said, it'll work, don't worry about it. And I hit my knees, and that's what I said. If anybody here is having any problems with the higher power deal, like I did, it worked for me just to hit my knees and say, God, Buddha, Allah, whatever your name is, I don't know, but I'd like to know. I don't know if you exist or not, but I'd like to know. I don't know if you care about me, and I don't know if you want to be in my life, but I'd like you to. And I came to him the next day, and actually I told him the next day it didn't work. My life didn't get any better. He told me to keep doing it. He told me to do it in the morning and at night. And I've heard people say that in the meetings. And for some reason, I was stupid enough to follow the instructions. Nowadays, I'm smarter. I come in here, I hear you guys say stuff, like put your shoes under the bed, that whole deal, you know, praying in the morning and night. And I'm smarter than you, and I know better than you, so I don't follow the instructions. And I end up going crazy. But back then, I was stupid enough to actually follow the instructions. So that's what I did. And Josh started on the 4th step the next day. He said, write a list of people you're pissed off at. I said, okay, and I went home, and a few hours later, I called him back. I said, dude, at first he had me read the 12 and 12 and the big book talking about that. And I read that stuff, and I sat down for a minute with a pencil, and I called him. I said, dude, I don't have any resentments. I'm not a resentful person. I don't know if any of y'all are like that with that 4th step. I'm doing that recently. I'm looking at the paper. Actually, it's right here. This 10th step/4th step, whatever you want to call it. Going, I don't really feel resentful. He told me to write down people I could be pissed off at if I wanted to be. Now I have a list. Okay? It didn't take long to come up with about 15 people that if I wanted to, I could really hate them. Persons go. I did that the best I could, and it wasn't very good. I had some stupid stuff on there. I still have stupid stuff on there today, but I did the best I could because he had had me. My sponsor Ryan had pointed out to me the stuff that we read at the beginning of every meeting, stuff like half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. He pointed out that there's those people out there smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, and half of them aren't going to be back next week, or at least not next year. And then there's the people in the room working the steps, which is the program, and recovery. And, dude, I don't want to die. I'm a wuss. And I don't want to suffer. I don't want to have 6 divorces. I'm too wussy for that shit. My dad can handle that. He was a military guy. I can't hang with that shit. So I did that the very, very, very best that I can. And I went and I did my 5th step. And, I think it was a week later, he told me, you know, you're not going to take a month or a year on your friggin' 4th step. We're going to do a 5th step in a week. And if you don't have some good shit, well, then you're just going to look like an idiot. So, you know, get started. And, you know, that was embarrassing and humbling because that whole idea that I had of I'm better than all of you got totally destroyed in a couple of different ways. It showed me that I'm self-centered, I'm fearful, basically I'm a wussy. But mainly, it said exactly what it says in the book. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness, that's what we think is one of our troubles. Above all, we all thought it must be rid of the selfishness. I was a completely selfish bastard, and I did not know that until I did that first step. And the other thing where it totally humbled me was that I didn't have any like really good shit on that. I didn't kill anybody. Damn it! This other guy that sobered up with us, he was a pimp. Right? So he had to make amends to all the hoes. And I want you to something on there like that, you know? But no, I was just like, I wasn't even a good alcoholic. I was just a really lame alcoholic. And then at the end of the fifth step, he asked me, he said, okay, what'd you leave off? What's the good shit? Damn it. How do you know? Well, okay, he's one of us. So I had to tell him that one thing I didn't want to ever tell anybody about that night with the crack whore down on 11th Street in Austin. That was eating my lunch. I hadn't been in AA long enough to know that my most embarrassing, horrible stuff is just really lame. You know? Here it is. I mean, and I've got my four step out in the car. Now y'all can read it if you want an example of a lame ass four step. And then I've got the current one here. You know, anybody wants to look at it, come up after the meeting unless your name's on it. Okay. No, nobody in here whose name is on it is
really?
Yeah. I'll add you later. No, you're two or three of your boyfriends are on there, but anyway, I got that relief from that guilt and that shame. I didn't have a burning bush, but that's what I had. And more importantly, my sponsor told me that, you know, all these people that take a month or a year to work the third step, to turn their will and their life over to God, he told me I'd just done that. He said, you know, you didn't want to come in here and do this, did you? No. Why'd you do this, then? Because that was God's will. And that's what I have to do today, is I got to quit worrying about me. I got to get out of that selfishness that the book talks about and do what this program suggests, because this is God's will for me. You'll see me kind of flipping through the book here, because there's a couple of things I underlined that I wanted to mention, because I'm kind of scared. I'm kind of scared for AA today, because I come in here, and you know, of course, anything I say up here, I don't speak for AA. I share my experience, strength, and hope, right? Unless someone is sharing this out of the book. If I'm telling you what's in the book, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. It says so right here, Alcoholics Anonymous. I come in here a lot, and I hear people talking about all kinds of shit that, I mean, they have their opinions, and that's great, and I love to get different people's opinions. I love to argue with different people's opinions. But I hear people say shit like, this is a selfish program. The book says 53 times, we have to be unselfish. It says selfishness will kill us. And I want to be real careful that I don't come up here and tell you something that will kill you. I want to give you all Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't want to just vent out all of the shit I've been, you know, guilty about or whatever, or just being funny. Because that's fun to do out by the fire. But this is supposed to be Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what the book is Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, fifth and sixth step wasn't all that friggin' hard for me because life sucked, like I said. And my sponsor had pointed out to me that even the first several steps were going to suck. The book says it. The book says, who wants to admit powerlessness? Practically no one. Right? Who wants to be the this inventory? Nobody likes to do that shit. But then later it tells us, it gives us the 12 promises. And we used to read the 12 promises at the group I covered up in. But it talks about how our fears will go away. It talks about how fear of economic insecurity will leave us. Fear of people will leave us. We'll understand the word serenity and know peace. And he told me these first steps are going to suck and the good shit's going to come at the end. So it wasn't that hard for me, although I have a couple of character defects that I like. I like my arrogance. I like thinking I'm better than you and smarter than you and beat you in every argument. And I like being lazy. I just, because if I'm not lazy, then I have to put forth effort, and I don't like to do effort, I guess, because I'm lazy. I don't know. But, you know, I have a hard time letting go of that stuff, but a lot of the other stuff, you know, it wasn't that hard. And I took about 2 days to kind of try to get those things over to God. And I did have, if any of y'all have read this, it gives us an escape clause that I love. It talks in here about asking God to remove from us the defects of character. What is the phrase? Anyway, the things that are not useful to Him. And I'm getting right back on my 2 years ago speech, but screw it. So that's kind of my escape, is I can say, God, take away my arrogance if you want. But if you don't, if you want me to stay arrogant, that's okay. Take away my laziness if you want. But if you want me to stay lazy, I'm all for it. And, you know, I still have some of that stuff, and that's okay. You know, I hit my knees and every morning, and I ask God what He wants me to do. And if He wants me to be lazy, I'll be lazy. If He wants me to get up and do the damn dishes like He did this morning, I'll get up and do the dishes. Cool. Mainly, what I have to pray for today is covered on page 69. Some of y'all who know me know how crazy that I get with women, relationships. Some of y'all have video. But, no, not really. No, not really. And, you know, it's in the area of relationships. People talk about, well, the book doesn't say this, it doesn't say that, it doesn't really say anything about relationships. There's a whole chapter on them. And there's a real specific test that I have to apply today. On page 69, it says, we subjected each relationship to this test. Was it selfish or not? See, because going back to earlier in the book, selfishness kills me. And selfishness kills others. And I've done some really selfish stuff in relationships in this program and really, really hurt some people. And I've hurt myself repeated with the same selfish actions with some of the same people. And some of y'all have gotten to witness that insanity. But that's what I'm trying to do today. And I'm in a much, much better relationship today, asking my higher power to help me not to be selfish. And I have this little card that I do. Every night, when I remember it, I have to ask certain questions about, you know, what I did that day. Did I, where was I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? I have to do that because, well, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's right there in that book, that list. And life's getting a lot better today. I'm a little bit lost here. I don't know quite where I'm going. I should get back to the prayer thing and whole higher power deal. You know, I mentioned that I didn't believe in God. I didn't know, maybe. And I prayed just the way that my sponsor told me to, and I did exactly what my sponsor told me to do. And he told me to answer the phone. No. And it was about 6 weeks later, I was doing some 12-step work at this treatment center where my little brother had gone to treatment for a little while. And I was going down there. I was riding my bike down there every Monday from Round Rock down to Westlake. And because I was going to get any links. If any of y'all know Round Rock and Westlake, it's like, I don't know, 40 miles on a bike. But it says here after we won't go to any lengths, even though I'm lazy. So anyway, I was going down there and I was trying to do some 12-step work with some of the kids down there. And one of the parents walked up to me about 6 weeks after I'd really started the steps and said, Ray, how do I find God? I tell you, have God in your life. You walk in here and God is, I mean, obvious in your life. How do I do that? And that was the first, like, God thing that sometimes I hit my knees and I said, God, I don't know if I believe in you. And then she's asking me this, and I had to look at my life. And 6 weeks of working the steps, my life had turned around so much. My attitude, my outlook. I couldn't go to sleep without getting screwed up before. Now, man, I was going to sleep every night just ecstatic to be alive and to be able to do 12-step work and try to save lives, you know. And I don't know how that works. I cannot explain these steps after 12 years. I can't explain how getting on my knees instead of praying in the car, how that's different. But that was my experience, was that absolutely after 6 weeks of that, there was no doubt that God was right here, guiding me every day. You know, if you're struggling with that, try it. Hit your knees. It sucks. It's humbling. Some of us who are arrogant don't want to hit our knees. We don't want to be humble even before the creator of the whole universe, because we want to be eye to eye with the creator of the universe, right? Am I alone in that? I don't know. But see, I wanted to be eye to eye with the creator of the universe, and I'm not. Okay? He's 10 billion quadrillion times more powerful and smarter and older and everything else than I am. So I can hit my knees, and I can humble myself with the creator of the universe. And I still don't know if the Catholics are right or the Buddhists are right or whatever, but, you know, I know that God works in my life. Well, actually, I know they're all wrong, but anyway, that's a topic for something else. No, they're all right. They're all wrong. They're just different perspectives. So I had God going in my life. I was doing the steps the way my sponsor told me, riding my bike to, as far as necessary, whatever. Told me to do the ninth step, and you know, told me to read it out of the book, read it in the 12 and 12, and just follow the instructions and not do it my way. I like to do things my way, but I tried to follow those instructions, and now, some of those are kind of hard. It's real easy. I don't know if anybody else does this, but there's a lot of them where I'd like to say, I can't make amends to that person. I can't make that up, right? Now, if I just owe somebody money, I can pay it. And I'm doing that right now. I pay $320 bucks a month, and I only have like $14,000 left to pay, but, you know, it's clear how you do that. But some of these, it's like, you know, I said some rude things to this person. I made them feel worthless. And a sponsor along the way pointed out to me a real good way to do that, to work with this lady Andrea, because it also says that we made amends wherever possible. Direct amends. See, because I want to do a lot of the excuses. I want to do a lot of these things like, well, donate some money to charity. It says direct amends. See, if I screw you over and I go donate to the United Way, I'm pushing out. Unless I have absolutely no other choice, it takes direct amends. Along the way, a sponsor pointed out to me that one way that I can figure out how to do those amends is I can work their fourth step. See, I screwed you over, so I sit down and I look at it like I'm you. And I go, Ray did this to me, and here's what it affected. My security, sex relations, personal, you know. Right out of the book, the list is in the book. And if I do that and I figure out that I took away your security, then I got to give you back some security, you know. And I did that with my ex-wife after we divorced. When she left me for the second time, you know, I had to do a 10-step, 4-step, whatever the heck you want to call it. Look at my part. Look at resentment. Look at what I'd done wrong. You know, be willing to you know, have those character defects removed, be willing to make amends, and make amends to her. And then one of the biggest things that I did was I was financially totally irresponsible, and she didn't know if the rent was going to be paid. She didn't know when the gas was going to get cut off, the electric was going to get cut off. And she was trying to raise her two daughters, and they'd come home from school, and she'd go to cook lunch for them, and the stove didn't work. We got evicted from our house. Of course, she definitely played a part in the eviction. Because she like took the rent money and spent it like garbage. But I was financially irresponsible, and I had to say, okay, how do I make that up to somebody? You know, I can't turn the gas back on from 2 years ago But I had to do my little fourth step, and I said, ah, I took away her security. I need to give her back some security. She'd left me once before, and she took half my shit. So I only had half as much shit as I used to, because she got rid of the shit. But when she left, I was like, I took away financial security. I got to give it back. So I paid a bill for 6 months, you know? And I bought her this little trailer to live in. But whatever it was, you know, I could look at that and I could go, how did it affect them? What did I take from them? Security, sex relations, personal relations, whatever it was. My 10th step, a lot of people, I don't know, I try to do that right out of the book. There's a list in the book, like I say, I've got it written on a piece of paper, and I hate that, because I don't like looking at where I'm selfish, inconsiderate, where I cause resentment, but my girlfriends love it, because, like my last girlfriend before this one, she just loved to tell people, you know, I don't have to worry about her lying to me. I know he will every now and again, because then he'll go to bed at night, and he'll look at the list, and it says, where was I dishonest? You know, and she'd get a phone call about once a week, you know, bedtime. Hey, doing my 10th step. I was dishonest about my motives, but I said was true. But really, I was just trying to get in your pants. You know, whatever. You know. But I say I hate it, but actually it's really, 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 really good for me. Because rarely do I get myself in a situation that I see other people getting into and the situations that I used to get into. You know, you hear and hear a lot because we're alcoholics, we're insane. It says that on the wall. Step two, we're insane. And so you hear about people, you know, cheating on their girlfriend with their twin sister and, you know, Springer's principle stuff. If y'all aren't familiar with the Springer principle, it's important to me. It's not on the wall like these principles like patience, perseverance, love. I think it should be. I might make a really big foot, Springer principle. If y'all aren't familiar with that, what it is, it works really well for me. If I'm thinking about doing something, especially around sex and women, as I say to myself, could I see this being discussed on Jerry Springer? If it's something that might get discussed on Jerry Springer, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I know this is a small town, y'all like to do that, but so I try to do my 10th step every night, and you know, my little piece of paper got buried under a lot of stuff, and I didn't do my 10th step for a long time, and y'all witnessed the results. And y'all saw me crying up here, and I left messages on some of your answering machines talking about killing myself. Not that long ago, you know, 11 years sober. But I'm trying to get back in it today because I don't want to go there. I don't want to have a shotgun in my mouth. I don't want to die. I don't want to be in prison. I know me, I don't think I would die because I do have a little bit of smarts on how to stay alive. But I'd end up in prison and that's where I would die because I'm scrawny, you know? I wouldn't make it. So I don't want to do that. So I'm trying to get back into that 10th step today. I'm trying to get into the 11th step. Because that's what it tells me to do in the book, is to enlarge my spiritual life. It says that there's the world's libraries are full of spiritual books, so I've been ordering some of those, reading some different books. I don't like to talk too much about non-AA approved literature in the meeting, but love to talk to people after the meeting. If you've read anything recently, something spiritually uplifting, you know, my sponsor told me, I was asking how do I do this in one step. He said, well, you think the Catholics are wrong about everything, right? No, not everything. Just 95%. So, okay, go get a book by a Catholic. And read it. And, you know, I did that, and that was really good for me. I found out they're not really wrong about 95%. It's only 90. You know, I'm reading some other books today, some classic books about different religions and things. I just started going to church a couple of weeks ago. Trying to enlarge that spiritual life because I've been told that what's the phrase? That it's about seeking God. It's not about finding God. Because I don't think I'm ever going to find him. But what's the phrase at the end of how it works? Somebody help me out here. A, B, and C. What the heck? Here we go. Oh, yeah. Last thing in how it works, that God could and would if he were sought. I still don't know if the Buddhists are right, or the Persian Muslims are right, or the Catholics are right, but I know that if I keep seeking, it's going to keep working, and life is really good today. Like I say, I'm lazy, so it just happened that I accidentally stumbled upon a job where I worked 3.5 hours a day, and working 3.5, and I'm an unboss, so I can choose which 3.5 hours those are. You know, and 3.5 hours a day, you know, pays enough money that I have cool toys like these and MP3 players and motorcycles and jet skis, and I bought a house a little over a year ago. I'm arrogant, and so I love being in charge, and you know, I have a job where I'm the boss, and people call me up for advice and say, "Ray, what should we do?" I love, you know. Every area of my life, my relationships, I have some really good close friends today. You know, people, I told you I'd never fit in. Even in AA, knowing all these speakers, I never fit in until I got to AA. I didn't fit in AA either. You know, I'm more of a wuss than y'all. I couldn't take it to the point that y'all did. But that first sponsor of my line showed me how to fit into AA, and it's by making the coffee and seeing the ashtray. You know, if you make the coffee, or if you sweep the floor, or if you print the schedules, somebody. I bet she feels like she fits in. I did when I was printing the schedules. You know, when I'm doing the work of the fellowship, I feel like I'm part of. And I have some really close friends today that I've known for many, many years. And I have some really close friends today that I've hardly known very long at all. But you guys get me, you know? And you're close enough friends that you can walk up to me and say, "How's the insanity today?" And we both know exactly what we're talking about. And we both know, you know, my relationship with God today is ever-expanding, and it's awesome. And, you know, I have a lot of things that... I literally have nothing to worry about today because all my worries belong to God. I'm about $3,500 short of where I need to be by the end of the month. I ain't too worried about it. You know? If I do His will, I take care of God's work, I'll take care of mine. You know? Got an awesome girlfriend today that's just sweet as can be. And talking about getting married and all that. Haven't been together this time around for very long, but we pretty much have the wedding place figured out and all that good stuff. You know, just an awesome, awesome life today where I pretty much have everything I want. Somewhere along the way I learned that, or somebody told me, I guess, that how to get everything you want is to just want what you have. And it's an awesome, awesome life today. But the best part about my life today is what I discovered back at that treatment center in Westlake, right, that bike down there, is the 12-step list. It's trying to carry this message to the person who still suffers. If y'all haven't done the real 12-step work, like it talks about in the book, working with others, or like it talks about in the last 350 pages of the book, there's a bunch of 12-steps go, oh, you're missing out. That is a high, like going to some drunk guy, or, you know, somebody just miserable in the hospital, just wrecked his car the night before, and talking to him, and going through these first few steps, doing that third step with him, the fourth step, the fifth step a couple of weeks later, and watching a guy really take off. So much better than any drug I ever tried, and I tried a few besides alcohol. I try to do the kind of auxiliary 12-step work, like going in and doing the inner group stuff. You know, if you call some new junk calls the inner group line or in my phone, or you know, going down to the convention this weekend. If y'all missed it, there was 1,000 AAs at the hotel. I got to be there all weekend doing the inner group table with some other people who are better than me, so they actually showed up on time. But just being able to be there and talk to 1,000 people like us, it's awesome stuff. But don't be fooled. You hear in these rooms sometimes people say cleaning out ashtrays is 12-step work. 12-step is to carry the message to another alcoholic. Unless that ashtray is an alcoholic, it's not 12-step work. It's service work. It's great. It's awesome because it makes you a part of. And if you're like me, being a part of is almost the Holy Grail. But until you've answered the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning and gone out and talked to an alcoholic who's halfway suicidal, friggin' mention it. Getting up here is awesome. Hearing a little bit of a message, not a very good one this time, because I couldn't think of my theme or follow anything, but it's good shit. But that's not 12-step work. If you read and how it works, or working with others, it doesn't talk about standing up in a meeting. But it's awesome stuff. And I'm trying to do more and more of that too, because, like I said, I'm a wuss. I don't want to go back out. I don't. And the other thing that I'm trying to do today is I get up here or I sit in meetings and I whine. I whine because I talk to somebody after a meeting about selfishness. And somebody comes up to me after the meeting or while I'm talking to the new guy, and they go, "That's not in the book about stay out of a relationship for a year." And I get pissed. I'm like, "Stop telling me what's in the book till you first read it." Because the last time I'll say, "What is Dr. Alcoholic Addict about?" That's still coming up. "You don't talk about drugs. That's in the book. Dr. Alcoholic Addict is a chapter in the book." But, see, I like to do that, but I'm a little hypocritical. Well, not really. That's not what the word hypocritical means. But I don't do what I say because there's still a couple of new stories in here I haven't read. So I'm trying to get back into the literature, back into the 12-step work, back into praying every night, the same stuff that worked 12 years ago that got me here. Because if it can take me from here and get me somewhere even better, this is awesome right here. And I can't imagine what's around the next bend. I don't always get what I want, but I normally get something better. You know, I thought I wanted this crazy little girl, some of y'all know. And that wasn't so big. There's something a lot better in store. God's got just some awesome stuff in store for all of us who do this. Not all of us who want it, not all of us who read it, not all of us who talk about it, but for all of us who do it. And see y'all around the next bend and see what next other amazing things that there are. I should also, I'm just going to plug real fast, if y'all like speakers, or especially if you want to hear a speaker who's better than me, who has a better message than me, who's been sober longer than me, and has a better sponsor than me, I've got some speakers, CDs from some of our other speakers, Debbie, Clifton, some of my favorite speakers over there. Catch me after the meeting if you want to hear a good speaker on the way home. Thanks.